Nice to have you, Malcolm. I guess feel free to start us off with any comments you want to make, with the forewarning that you've already got a couple of questions in the hopper.
Sure. It's my pleasure to be here. I'm very appreciative of what the work that the RAC does, and absolutely looking forward to hearing any questions or opening up conversation and discussion that we can have this evening. And I do apologize that I do have a window of time this evening. So let's start this conversation. All right?
Yeah. Thanks for joining us. I particularly wanted to thank you for being the board member who is present at the public hearing. Last week. I think it really meant a lot to the community. I wanted to ask you what personally your takeaways were from that, and how it impacted your decision making. You know, what you reported back to the board. There were a lot of comments on specific bus routes, on various proposals that were sort of put forth in the docket. And based on what you heard, do you think that you'll be advocating for any changes to that docket?
Well, I think it always is good to humanize. And the mic is really working tonight. It doesn't always work like that. It's
loud.
Okay. Which is good. Yeah, I mean, it always, to me at least, it's always better when it humanizes kind of, how important service is. And it definitely helps me. It moves me to advocate more for service, for us to remember that that's what we're here to do, is to provide transportation. That's our primary goal, our primary mission, and we have to do our very best to find financing, money to be able to support it. All, this is an investment, an infrastructure investment like any other infrastructure investment that we make, and that we should always be doing that. I do definitely appreciate and take notes and listen to people who are, they are able to personalize sort of how important those routes are to me. Absolutely.
Joseph? Yeah, so thank you so much. I just realized these questions are more geared towards Lynn, but because I think she would be able to, dive into these questions, but... of course, I'm sure. But I'll save them for maybe later. But my question for you is, I think as a RAC, we're trying to be more intentional about kind of creating more opportunities. Or I can speak for myself, but for the PPP committee, we're trying to be more intentional about creating opportunities where we could directly engage with riders, get to see what their wishes, desires, concerns, issues are, so that we can more effectively represent and advocate on their behalf before the board and the WMATA staff and in general. And I was wondering, I know Paul Wiedefeld, he mentioned certain things that we could, he didn't want to bias anything, but when I asked him, what are some themes or things that you would like to ask riders? He said some of the things were, riders thought, washing or painting the stations were a good idea, or music is good, or certain things like that. So what would you ask riders if they were listening in here? I mean, we're all riders, but what would you ask them?
Well, I would back up a little bit on what you said, and I would, one of the criticisms that was said at the hearing, which I can appreciate, is, it's not necessarily so easy for folks to come here to Metro. And in my conversations with RAC members in the past, there had been discussion about sort of branching out perhaps and getting, closer to riders, particularly outside of, this core. I mean, it's a different kind of rider too, quite frankly. And it's a different kind of metro rider, it's a different kind of bus rider, it's a different kind of access rider once you kind of move outside of, again, sort of just like the needs or the core and what people do here. So for me, that would be fantastic to be able to get more feedback that is directed or that's coming from a broader sort of cross-section of the riders and from a wider area. And you know, as far as like specific things, you know, for example, when there was the discussion, I just always remember like the idea of putting air freshener in the rail cars, which was an idea. And you know, I mean, a few people they reached out to me and they were just like, listen, I've got this allergy or stuff like that. You know, I mean, I can't, it negatively impacts my ability. I can't ride now, right? Like if it's got this air freshener in there. And you know, so getting that feedback, more of that feedback, you know what I mean? And then having it more come in a strong form and a consolidated form, I think would be very helpful. And then I would ask you to ask yourself, right? Which is, you know, I mean, as people talk to you and they ask you questions about, oh, can we do this? Or, you know, what should we try to do that? You know, bring it forward. I mean, you know, vet it amongst yourselves, of course, and if it's something that, you know, makes some sense, you know, let's bring it forward. All right? Sure.
Clarence.
Hi, thank you for being with us. Just on a quick note on the comment brought up over there, I think something that we'll be able to try, something we do at my work a lot, is like virtual town halls, where in which people don't have to be physically present in the space, but they can live stream an event and also participate in questions, whether or not it's even in communal spaces, or it's them with other people in their districts, but at least it takes you out of like the geographic prohibition of like people not being able to get here. But the question I have is sort of, I know there's been an ongoing push now again for the conversation having like dedicated funding for Metro, seeing this more like on Virginia and DC is being more on board with that one, and you representing Maryland, whereas that's just not, it hasn't picked up the same kind of steam there. Because one of the big reoccurring things for me is just always...
Say that again?
It hasn't...
No, explain. I'm just trying. I didn't understand exactly what you say it again for me.
Oh, like dedicated funding, where in which Virginia and D.C. seem more on board for having this be a permanent solution going forward. And then, and correct me if I'm wrong, that's why I'm asking this question. In terms of the local government over here, and then on the Maryland side, having a little bit more resistance to that. Given that this is seemingly coming up again, and I know something that Metro has tried in the past, it seems as those efforts weren't successful, do you think this is a time of a push where in which it might come through, and where in which, what are some of the things that you could be getting over the hump? Because one of the things we've just had come over and over again is sort of we're in this sort of hole right now, but next year all of the signals we will be in that same hole again. Interesting, like how do we kind of get out of that full time if we're not dedicated funding from the various jurisdiction will be a solution to that.
Okay, sure. First of all, I just have never met you before. So where are you from?
I'm from DC.
You're DC? Okay, great. You know, I have I've said fairly consistently that there has not yet been a time. I mean, it's a negotiation, of course, but there's not yet been a time that at least the state of Maryland has not come up with the money that was needed for Metro. If you actually look back at what has occurred on the capital side, which is what this discussion is about, if you look back, there has been consistently actually an underperformance by Metro versus what was actually budgeted for. In other words, they were delivering 60-65% of what was provided in essence by the jurisdictions. And this management team is not doing that. This management team is absolutely exceeding delivery on the capital side, which is great. It's fantastic. It was one of the concerns that I had when I first came a couple of years ago, was that we weren't doing that. So that changes the game. So that's the first thing, is that it does change the game with regard to the funding issue. So now that we're able to deliver, there is a discussion about how much money is needed, and there's also that discussion about the dedicated funding versus non-dedicated funding. But it's more, it's you know, that's a simplification to a certain degree, because yes, there is not a specifically dedicated fund for Metro in Maryland, but there is a dedicated fund for transportation in Maryland. It's a transportation trust fund, and those funds are specific for transportation for the state of Maryland, and it is yet to not deliver money to Metro. So some of the discussion within that is that, okay, the reason why we need that money to be dedicated is so that WMATA is able to go to the capital markets and get additional money by bonds, you know, in order to sort of support these projects as they come in. They're up and down, and they're big numbers. But if you actually look at WMATA's balance sheet, we have very little debt. You know, I mean, we're not, and I've asked this consistently, we're not anywhere near touching sort of the bonding capacity that we currently have. It goes back to this whole performance thing. All to say that it's, you know, we have yet to come as far as thus far, actually to that point where we haven't delivered the money. The jurisdictions have not yet delivered the money. There are challenges going forward. I mean, there's no question about it. We are now operating, you know, typically there's an agreement where there's 6 years of capital that the jurisdictions agree to. Right now we don't have one. And that needs to get worked out, which says how much money each is going to be able to give over the coming years. But I'm confident that the jurisdictions will, in fact, come up with the money. I am confident of that. And that each actually already has. D.C. has, they've said this, you know, before. They already have on the books a mechanism. They're not using it. A sales tax, basically, for that could do this. But I'm going to tell you, I just don't support the sales tax. It's a regressive tax. I mean, it unfairly puts the burden on the people who are least able to afford, you know, such a tax. And I just don't support that. I mean, versus in Maryland, where we have the Transportation Trust Fund, which is set up, which does have, we have an increase in our gas tax in Maryland to be able to support sufficient project. This is why the governor is able to say, I got $125 million that I can put towards it. Why? Because we have the money. We have the money. And so Maryland is going to deliver. They're going to deliver. They have consistently delivered, and they will do it again. I believe the district is going to deliver, and I also believe Virginia is. I mean, there's a lot of sort of movement, sort of posturing that's going on, but no one wants to see Metro fail. Everybody knows that Metro cannot fail. And so we're not gonna let it fail. I just don't think that that's gonna happen. But to characterize sort of that, that Maryland is not on board with the sales tax or stuff like that, yeah, that's right. But that's not to say that Maryland is not on board with, at least that's for me, I'm not, I'm for sure not. That's not to say that Maryland's not on board with providing adequate funding for Metro. I believe that Maryland is on board for that.
Good evening. I just wanted to piggyback on the other comments regarding doing more than one hearing in the future. It had historically been that way. I don't know why it was changed, probably because of budget issues, because everything has to do with budget. But I think that it's a disservice to the writing public, because the person that comes from, let's say, from Springfield or from Rockville, they're not going to come here in the evening on a weekday just to testify for 3 minutes. It's not realistic. So I think we should go back to doing hearings in each locality. Arlington and Alexandria could, you know, we could join them. but.
Yeah, I support that. I would, yeah, I think that it would make sense definitely to make, to share that, share that, that, that observation. And also that, you know, in some ways the retort to that is the volume that we receive of responses electronically. But that's just not the same writer, right? And it's also not the same people. So I think that that in some ways distorts, you know, sort of the picture that we receive when we aren't actually going closer to where the people are, which I said earlier. So I definitely support I support what you're saying. And if that comes forward as a recommendation, I mean, I would definitely be as supportive as I can of that.
Thank you. And I'm sorry I came in late. I worked till 6, so I got here as quick as I could. I wanted to follow up a little bit on the funding issue, and I know you are not personally responsible for the funding of Maryland, Virginia, or D.C., but I think there's an important point, and I'm not sure if you or any of our colleagues have ever read the book The Tipping Point, but it actually has a great Maryland example of cutbacks that were done gradually, little bit by little bit, of the health department in Baltimore. More cutbacks. Oh, okay, well, we'll cut a little bit here. We'll trim a little bit there. We'll close down this evening clinic. And guess what? It didn't happen in 1 year or 2 years, but after all these little incremental cuts because, you know, the budget was bad or people didn't make a decision, what happened was one of the largest resurgence of sexually transmitted diseases on the East Coast, because Baltimore happens to be a pass-through of a lot of people traveling, and the health clinics in Baltimore, through the tiny incremental cuts, yes, they may have gotten the majority of their funding, but they had to, because of the up and down nature, had to keep trimming it. There were other consequences, other negative consequences. And I think that just because we've had a nice gentleman's or gentlewoman's agreement to do things in the past does not provide security for the future. I would like all of our communities to be here.
Okay, it's not a gentleman's or anything. It's the compact, okay? The compact stipulates that the jurisdictions must pay for Metro. That is the compact. That is what we live by. And so it's not, you know, and at the end of the day, the jurisdictions have to pay. That is just a fact. Now, there is a negotiation, of course, on, you know, there's a push and a pull about the budget, but there is not a, it's just that's not the case. The fact is that each of the jurisdictions have signed on and have a responsibility for paying for this system. And that just simply hasn't changed. I mean, that is the compact. That's the way. And I apologize. I didn't ask. Ms. Silva, where are you from? You're from Arlington, and I'm sorry.
I'm
from
D.C. Cook.
You're from D.C.? Okay.
But I don't understand, because we've had board members come and say, talk to your representatives. We need to make sure that we have money. Do we not? I don't understand. If you say that the money's already agreed on and everyone's going to pay the money for WMATA, then why have we heard from board members for several months say, talk to your representatives about making sure that WMATA gets its money?
No, first of all, what I responded to was you saying there was some gentleman's agreement as with regard to people paying for the system. So I responded to that by saying to you that that's just simply... That's not the case. What I did say, that we, as jurisdictions, we have to pay for the system. Then I said there is a negotiation that does occur with regard to that budget. That's what the board members are talking about. They're talking about the negotiation that occurs with regard to the budget. But I just got to let you know, even I have not heard anyone suggest, first of all, the dedicated funding discussion is around $500 million, right? But that doesn't do anything with the operating subsidy, which is $845 million, nor the other portion of the subsidy, which is, I don't remember off the top of my head, but whatever it is, $500, $600, that's probably higher than that, $600 or $700 million more dollars. So, but in other words, that's not going away. That discussion that happens with regard to the lion's share of the money, the proposals that you've heard, don't do anything about that. The proposals that you've heard are attempting to close a gap where the amount of money that is currently coming from, in essence, from the jurisdictions, plus inflation, which is about 3%, which is what they built into it, and what he is suggesting, what the general manager suggested, is that when he looks at it, he sees $15.5 billion of need over the next 10 years, and so he needs an extra $500 million in these dedicated funds to support that incremental amount above. But there's still going to be, the annual discussion about the lion's share of the money is simply not going away. No one has suggested that there is going to be a dedicated fund that's going to provide, a couple billion dollars. No one has said that. So that is still going to be the case. We're still going to be in a situation of negotiating with the jurisdictions about the amount of subsidy that they're going to provide for both the operating and the capital side. And hopefully, as has been in the past, the capital side will be a six-year negotiation or something, when you create a longer-term agreement, but that is still going to be the case.
Thank you. Changing tactics slightly, I have a question for you. In your two-plus years on the board, what is the most valuable or helpful thing that has come from the RAC?
That's a good question. I don't have a great answer for that, honestly. I just will be very frank with you. I've had good conversations, particularly like with the folks from Maryland, when we've gotten together, just sort of to hear some of what's going on in the system. And I've also, because I've come and visited you guys a couple of times, appreciated some of the thoughts and proposals on some of the revenue things that we talked about here together. But I don't have a great answer for you beyond that, really. I mean, I do definitely take a look at and read. We get a ton of information, obviously. I do look at your reports each month and see the things that you work on and some of the recommendations that you make. But as you know, because I've come here and I've talked to you about some of them in the past, oftentimes there's like another side, to it, that if we don't get a chance to kind of have a conversation like we're having now, it's sort of one-sided, right? We get other information that you may not have. So there probably needs to be more of a dialogue for those things.
We're always looking for feedback from both the board and staff as to how we can be most useful. We are a group of, theoretically anyway, 21 people who represent the several million who are here. And we want to be more than just a bit of a focus group for WMATA. We want to be as useful as we possibly can to give y'all the right perspective. So whatever we can do to be as strategic as possible with the advice or feedback that we give, now or later, we'd be happy to take
it. No, I agree. And I would just suggest again that it be as broad as possible, right? I mean, like you're saying, as you get as much as possible. Another thing for me that's always important is a sense of the riders. Just from a marketing sense, which is where my professional side, I mean, I really would like your body to be able to provide that. I mean, because you actually, I'm hopeful that you touch, as we all do, you touch a other group and you can provide like just a sort of a sense of the riders and how do they feel. So for example, how do the riders feel now, right? We're out of safe track to a certain degree. So how are people responding? I understand it'll be anecdotal, but it still would be helpful to know how are people responding to the new normal? How are they responding? For example, as you all are in yourself and in your extension, and to receive that kind of feedback for me would be very, very important. I also would want to know, you know, some of the changes in the loss of routes and stuff like that, which I just didn't support. I mean, I would want to hear, you know, whether or not you heard anything about that, right? Which was part of what you were talking about before. Because what happens is, honestly, this is what happens. You know, the routes get reduced, and if folks don't hear about it, I mean, it goes back to kind of what you were talking about. It kind of feeds on itself, but it feeds on itself in the opposite way, which is that if people are not up in arms after the fact, it actually, you know, sadly makes it easier to cut more routes because people didn't say anything. It's sort of like it really didn't. It kind of reinforces itself, unfortunately. So if there is some feedback, if there is some, you know, that's coming, I would be very, you know, I would really
appreciate
it.
I think that's why I want to thank you, because during the public hearing, you pointed out that the rack was in the room and an elderly person came up to CISA, and we followed up. And yesterday we both went to that retirement home. There were dozens of people, senior citizens there, that told us this bus stop is right in the corner of my community currently, but you guys, there's construction going on and there's so many impediments and you guys are eliminating this bus stop. Please, please, please keep our bus stop here. We'll have petitions. We'll come down to here if you need to. Metro access is very difficult. It costs a lot currently. It's going to cost even more, and it takes them too long. It takes them, like, there's, you know, Uber Pool, Lyft Line. You know, sometimes they reroute you based on other people that are in your route, etc. But, you know, this happens to Metro Access too. They don't know where they're going because other passengers within their van are going different places, and so it takes them, like, really long time, 45 minutes, an hour. So we all know this. It's really expensive. It's not an easy issue, but as a PPP committee, we're pushing for rack numbers, hopefully, to at least once a quarter to try to get out there in their respective jurisdictions to kind of hear more of them. Like, I know Clarence mentioned town hall. That's something we're trying to push also, just doing more virtual things like that through our Facebook page, facebook.com/WMATARack. And then even doing things like rack quests, where they could request a rack member to go to their organization and talk to them and kind of hear them out, like if they have 10-plus members, so that we could learn more about their unique interests. And so we're really looking to put this up a lot more. Sorry.
That's great. I appreciate that. I saw that my fellow Marylander had his thing up, Mr. Fogle, and obviously my other fellow Marylander, Mr. Sheehan.
I'm
going
to
Okay.
All right. Thanks. Just real quick then, on the Metro Access side of things, the Abilities Ride just started 2 weeks ago. Been a huge amount of people taking that. We're going to be looking at the Abilities Ride program to make sure that it's viable. Operationally, it still needs some work. Mr. Blake, Mr. Kent, Kristen Kent are looking at that, making sure that things are going to be run operationally. I know that Phil Posner, I think he spoke to you a couple days ago, about meeting with the Maryland contingent to see what we could do to improve that. And I think that if we can get the Abilities Ride to work and people are happy, that might be a model that we could move so you could have same-day service in D.C., Virginia, and that sort of thing. So we're happy with what's going on with it. Congratulations on a great program. We need some communication training, that kind of work, but AAC is going to be moving in that direction, so we will track it for you, let you know the good, the bad, and the ugly, and work with staff to make sure that it improves.
No, I appreciate that, and I appreciate the fact that there's a phased rollout of the program, and also it's an educational process for all of us when you look at it's like an 80-20 situation with regard to the people who utilize Metro Access, that 20% of the people use 80% of the resource. And so I think that this is a great opportunity for us to see if there's a way for us to, you know, get that 20 to utilize this process, which I think will be beneficial to all. So I'm excited about it, too. Thank you.
Yeah. And with that, we thank you.
Kenzie, did you have a question?
One more.
Yeah, no, I, listen, I don't want
to
not, I understand,
community.
Yep,
okay.
Go ahead.
Back to the discussion about the compact. I've never read it, but I understand from what you were saying that, you know, there's a requirement in there. It's not just, so it's kind of a both thing. But I think one of the things that is overriding, you know, deal that's coming out is that the folks in the jurisdictions are saying we're losing the service in the local area and it's being more directed into D.C. and they're losing that service. Is there something in the compact that says while the jurisdictions are required to do this, Metro is also required to make sure they're servicing those jurisdictions to the fullest extent that they can? Because just even recently, you just knocked out a whole bunch of local service along the Columbia Pike Corridor, which is going to leave a lot of people stranded, which is why some of the people in Virginia are like, why are we paying for this? We're losing service. So is there a push-pull on the compact as to what Metro's responsibilities are?
It's not a matter of a push-pull, and I'm assuming now that you're from Virginia?
Is that, I'm Arlington.
You're from Arlington, okay. No, there's not a push-pull. There's a service area, right? And there are services that are provided within the metropolitan area, the service area of Fairfax and Arlington and Alexandria, D.C., Prince George's County, and Montgomery County. And, yeah, and that's it. I mean, perhaps Loudoun will be added. It's not right now, but perhaps it will be. And then within, you know, so that's the service area. And then, you know, there are studies. We have a significant planning department. There are studies that are done. And then there are formulas which, in essence, kind of set the subsidy for each of the jurisdictions based on mileage, riders, areas that are going to be covered. And those, and then that's part of that negotiation, of course, of, you know, the impact that that's going to have on the subsidy that each of the jurisdictions are going to be put into the system. So if there was a change, and oftentimes, too, depending on the jurisdiction, they'll try to, I know that we do this in Prince George's County, we try to make sure that we don't, when we make changes, that we don't, but in essence, cut someone off from public transportation. So and that's my understanding as well, that would have happened on Columbia Pike, such that it may not look the exact same, but that the local jurisdiction would be providing service that would be as close to it, if not exact, but that would not cut people off completely. I'm not saying the same. I mean, and there are definitely those changes that occur, but that is, you know, it's much more broad than, you know, very specific to each of the places. And I mean, it's a huge area. I mean, Prince George's County is 500 square miles. Montgomery County is like 500 square miles. I mean, you know, these are very big areas, and there's not enough density to, economically reach. I mean, we have a limited resource, like we were talking about before, to economically reach out from a public transportation standpoint to all the different places. So, sure. All right. So,
thank you,
everybody. If you ever have any other kind of thoughts or questions for me, I'm always accessible, and I really appreciate your time. Yes. Sure. The best way is to probably call or text. Folks are okay with that? I mean, that's how it works best for me. And my cell phone is 301-501-2660. And I'll get right back to you. All right? Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a good night.
Thanks. Sure.
We will now switch to someone else who is time limited with us this evening. So, Lynn Bowersox.
Oh, well, the microphone wasn't on. How about that? Okay. Okay, I'll start again. The board members who were talking to you about contacting your representatives were doing that on account of congressional funding that forms the basis of our capital program. It's part of a law called PREA, the Passenger Rail Investment and Improvement Act of 2008. P-R-I-I-A, PREA. It's the acronym. You know, everything in Washington must have an acronym or it's not real. That's right. Exactly. PREA is almost 10 years old. It was Congress's funding of PREA that said, we will give WMATA $150 million a year for 10 years, $1.5 billion. The jurisdictions will match it. That will create the capital program. That will allow you to reinvest, replace, and rehabilitate your infrastructure and your facilities as you go along. That program has been in place now since 2008. It's a 10-year program, and it's 2017. It's set to expire in the Congress. What those other board members were asking you to do is to contact your representatives in Congress, your House of Representatives, your congressmen, and your senators, because the Washington Metropolitan Area delegation that forms the advocacy group in Congress for WMATA needs to work very hard to get that reauthorized. Reauthorization would give us at least that $150 million a year. That's matched by the jurisdictions. That's our capital program. If we don't get that money, we have a big problem. Okay? To tell you how important it is, when Governor Hogan put out his plan, his interim plan, to bridge to dedicated funding, right, he actually called for an increase in PREA. That's pretty ambitious considering that the partisanship that's going on in the Congress would lead one to believe that it's a heavy lift, particularly given the tax bill that they're looking to pay for, to do even what we have today. Okay? So, again, board members are asking you, because you live here in the region, your representatives, my congressman, Congressman Delaney, is a tremendous supporter. My senators in Maryland are tremendous supporters. They do all the heavy lifting for WMATA. If you contact them and tell them how important it is, it's helpful to us. Okay? So that was that point.
Thank you. I was very confused by that. I was thinking, wait a second.
Sure. Does that clear it up for you? Okay. There was another question, Lorraine, about why we reduced to one hearing for fare increases and things of that nature, service cuts. I need to tell you that it wasn't because of the budget. It was because customers told us to stop having hearings. A couple of years ago, we put together a public participation plan, and the board approved it. And that plan was directed by the FTA. And they said, go out and ask your customers how they want to hear about information from you. And so we did. We got on buses, we went to train stations, we went to grocery stores, we went to synagogues, we went everywhere our customers go, schools, and we said, how do you want to hear information from us? And they said, well, for the love of God, stop telling us to come downtown to hearings or to Arlington's municipal buildings. We don't have time for evening hearings or daytime hearings. We work, we have children, they have soccer, we have many commitments, and we're not coming to public hearings. And you know what? Our numbers told us that was right, because the turnout was pretty low. They said, come to where we are. Get online, ask us on Facebook, come to the grocery store, come to my house, intercept me when I'm on the bus, intercept me when I'm in the rail station and ask me what I think. And do it in at least 7 of the 26 languages that are spoken in this region. So that's exactly what we did. We put together a public participation plan, and any time there is a major policy or service decision that's going to the board that is considered by this organization, we execute that plan. We go out into communities, we take surveys, we go online, we talk to community-based organizations, and we ask everybody what they think. So the numbers have gone up. The numbers of people who are engaged in these discussions now exceeds 10,000 every time we do it, okay? So instead of having 100 people at a hearing or 300 people that come to three hearings, we get the input from thousands and thousands of riders using a variety of different outreaches. You don't see it because we're in the communities. We're not asking people to come here. That said, I'm really interested in the RAC's interest in going and having more outreach opportunities, and I love what Joseph said about going to the retirement community. There's no reason the RAC can't have its meetings in different places. So if you wanted to, you could rotate. We have 40 facilities. You know, we can find other meeting places for you. Joy's looking at me like, oh, how am I going to do that? But we do, and we can.
And if you said, hey, once every quarter, instead of being downtown, we'd like to be in Alexandria, we'd like to be in Prince George's County, we can get that done, okay? And that way you could, you know, advertise that through your channels to the community. And that way if people, you know, it's not convenient for them to be here in D.C. at 6:30, but they can come to Arlington, then they will. But you could do that if you were so inclined. And it was just a thought I had when I was listening to the conversation. And finally, you all talked about having, I think this was from you, Clarence, and it usually is if it's technology, if I recall, talked about having a two-way street conversation, a town hall style. So the board has that same opportunity sometimes. You know, we live stream what you do here, right? It's live on the internet, but you can't get calls in. So what we do for the board members when they can't be in the room, is we also set up a teleconference. So in other words, we could put a phone here. You could have people call in and ask questions while they're listening online. It just requires two technologies. It's a little old school, but it's what we have. And you could implement that at your next meeting if you were so inclined, okay? So that would be one way to let people participate without leaving their homes. And particularly, as you said, for Metro Access customers for whom this trip may be a little onerous, you know, they could participate and ask you all questions. So that's just another suggestion that I had, thinking about your conversation. And last, I just wanted to say that you didn't ask me, but I'm going to offer it. The most useful thing that the RAC has done for me in the last 2.5 years, immediately following the tragedy at L'Enfant Plaza a couple of years ago, we really took a hard look at how we did emergency evacuations from our trains. And Patrick will remember this, I think. Some of you were around then. One of the things that we realized is that we hadn't done a lot of instruction to the passengers in the recent past. So we put together a new video, and we realized that by the time you read any of the emergency signs on board a train, the smoke would have overtaken you because they were so complicated. And so we came to the RAC and we asked for help in editing that sign and in putting together the information in the video that people most needed. Again, not just a focus group, but editing real words, real life experience and suggestions. And it was incredibly helpful. It was very well received by our customers. And so I can think of a lot of things that the RAC has done, but that's one that really stands out for me as being a real legacy thing for you all to have participated in. And I know some of you continue to volunteer when we do drills, and that's so critical for us to have customers, real customers, volunteering in those drills. So all those things together have really improved our response in emergencies, and so I think the RAC should get a lot of credit for that, okay? Moving on, you see the back to good slide. I just wanted to say that I hope you all are experiencing better service. I hope that back to good statistics resonate for you. I'm very proud of the fact that since July 1st, 9 out of 10 customers have gotten where they're going on time. And when I say that, I mean based on your tap in, tap out, not based on my trains, not headway adherence, based on you all tapping in and tapping out, we know who's on time. And so that's really been sustained July, August, and into September. So I think we're on the right track. We can always improve. We always have to get better. It's a real continuous process for sure. But I do hope that you're starting to experience a more reliable service and that you'll think of ways to help us get that information out to customers. We're doing some work with Greater Washington to try to promote going online and looking up the My Trip Time statistics. If you haven't tried it yet, get your Smart Trip card account, go on there and look and check it yourself to see how on time you are. Deborah's having problems with it. That's all right. That's quite all right. Are you having problems with the?
To lose riders. If a rider says, I'm going to go from pit A to pit B, and it can't come up with a solution for them, they say, well, I can't use Metro, but at the same time, there is a solution, and My Trip doesn't give it. So you lose riders when My Trip doesn't give an actual route that is available and the customer doesn't know it. I have a route I take, and it's the perfect route. I punched in My Trip. It didn't come up with that route. I tried to do it 3 or 4 different ways. It basically said I could not get from where I wanted to go to where I wanted to be in Metro, and yet I knew I could. So I think you're losing some revenue there.
So I think we're talking about two different things, just to clarify. What you just described is, to me, the trip planning function on the website, where you put in where you want to go, and it tells you how to get there either by rail or bus or other means, right? That's what you're talking about?
What were you talking about then?
So My Trip Time is something that you log into,
right.
Mm-hmm.
with
your Smart Trip card.
I'm not sure how you guys track that, because, for instance, just last week, My Trip Time took 45 minutes longer than it was supposed to. And how do you guys know if somebody gets on a bus and they get off, how long they took, and if it was longer or not? Or somebody gets on a train and then they transfer to a bus, how do you measure that their trip time was okay?
So it's rail specific, and it's tapping in and tapping out of the rail station. So it contemplates you transferring between trains, but it doesn't transfer over to bus. Okay? But it is interesting, at least as a measure of rail reliability, for you to go online and check that and see how your travel is changing, if it's changing at all, because it's very individualized. And it's also unique in that no other transit property in the United States uses a similar measure. Everybody else measures their trains. Nobody has this on-off-the-system capacity to track your actual experience. So we're trying to get as close to the customer experience as we can, and I think it's a really valuable tool for you. So with that, I'm going to move on to 7Ks if I can, and then I'll leave a couple minutes for questions because I see the signs going up. And hopefully you can answer my question when you ask a question. So the 7000 series trains, the newest in our fleet, have been out in service now for months. And so hopefully all of you have had an opportunity to ride on them. We, as you may recall, did extensive work with customers when designing those trains to make sure that they were meeting customers' expectations, and some of those customers stayed with us through the entire design process, went up to Canada, were part of the design team there when they first started, came along the way. And I think some of them even went out to Nebraska when the cars started getting built. I don't recall, but I think that's the case. We're now starting to ask customers, what do you think of those cars? And we do that for a couple of reasons. Because in the fleet, when we get to the next iteration, which is a little ways away, we want to be able to improve on what we've done, both in terms of repeating anything that we like and improving on anything that isn't quite getting there. So I didn't want to draw all of you out to a focus group. I'd rather just hear what you think. So I'm very interested to know, and I'll prejudice you by telling you some of the early findings. Is that okay? The first couple of groups of customers who went through said three things. One, more cushion in the seat, please. I like the lumbar support. I like the colors. I like the individualness of it, but I would like more cushion in the seat. They're probably all my age. The second one was handholds. I'm surfing in the train. I need more places to grab. And the third one was video screens. We really like the video. Could it be bigger? Okay, so that's what I've heard so far. With that, I'm going to stop and give you guys back the rest of the time to ask questions and tell me what you think. And I'm going to take notes if you don't mind. And Joy will back me up so that I don't miss anything.
Let's start with Rebecca.
Let's see. Thank you. My question is regarding the planning process that you mentioned with how you take stakeholder input. I'm really impressed with that response, and I'm really grateful that that's how input is provided. I work with elderly clients, and they rely heavily on Metro buses and rail. So it's really helpful for me to know that there are ways that stakeholders can advocate on their behalf. So I'm curious how the stakeholders can become a part of that plan, and what are some examples of stakeholder groups that you might be able to mention that are already included in that? That was a question. And then I just wanted to say thank you for asking for our feedback about the 7000 series. And I will say that I have seen people reaching for places to hold. There's not as many places for those short people like me who cannot reach to the highest rail. So thank you very much.
I'd be glad to add any group that you're aware of to our PPP community-based organizations list. It could be anything from church women's auxiliary to CASA to any sort of organization that represents any aspect of the community. We have about 200 organizations on the list today, but we're always looking for more. So if you have some who are interested in advocating on behalf of seniors, that would be terrific. So if you just email Joy, and she'll forward that on. Sure.
I don't think so. Going around, I better prioritize those who didn't ask Malcolm anything yet, so we'll go with Paul.
Thank you very much for coming, Lynn. I have a couple of couple things. About the 7000 series, it's interesting you mentioned the lumbar support. The quote-unquote focus group I had at my work was that everyone was, they liked the new 7000 a lot, and they liked, they liked how we got rid of the psychedelic colors and on the carpet and all that. But they didn't like how the seats were, the lumbar support on the seats. So while some people like it, other people don't, that the seat is, like, completely vertical. So you're like, it's too aggressive. That's a good one. That's a good one. Yeah. But also the lack of handholds. That's a really good one. Poles. You know, like maybe a few more poles. But all in all, the experience from my quote unquote focus group was extremely positive. We're all very impressed. The announcing is great. I don't know if you're going to do announcements in Spanish too. I don't know if that came up at all, but that might be something to think about. Let's see. On the technology side, you were mentioning some of the my trip time. I don't know if you guys have done any work with DC Metro Hero, but that is an amazing app. That is, I tell everyone about that. I think they pull from WMATA on the back end. I think a little bit. I don't know. I'm not a systems analyst, but I've that thing has saved me and my friends, people I know, so many times. Anything you do with those kids, I say kids because I'm showing my age a little bit, but anything you can do with those people is spot on. Those people are brilliant. Keep up the good work with them.
Thanks. We made a decision early on to make our data very publicly accessible in the hopes that other people who knew how to develop apps would do that. It's not our core business, and clearly Metro Hero is a great example of people who know what they're doing. Thanks.
Lynn, I'm going to look to you to let us know when you absolutely have to leave. Okay, Sawyer?
I will make mine just all about feedback on the 7000. I'll just run through it in the interest of time. Speaking of time, if we could get the time on the screen, I've looked there a couple times kind of expecting it to be there, and I'm like, wait, it's not there. And I know we all have watches and phones, but sometimes it's not accessible if you're trying to put your backpack on the floor to make more space for people and things like that. So time. The rail car numbers aren't as visible on them, and when we're talking about like emergencies, if they could be more pronounced. I have positive feedback on the openness that allows people with luggage to kind of manipulate that better than they've been able to manipulate it with the other rail cars, and also positive feedback on the height of the partitions. I have felt a lot less claustrophobic since they don't go all the way up. Which is great when there's kind of overcrowding. And then the final thing I'll say on the screens, I know a few other countries have actual video promos instead of just, and sometimes they're fun to watch, especially if they're like in other languages and stuff, it's probably part of the draw. But if you are thinking about adding more screens, just kind of finding the balance between the informational screen and then promotional screens and the balance between that. So I'll just let that one hang out there.
Will?
This kind of piggybacks on what Sawyer was saying, but I remember, I believe this was last year when when Paul Wiedefel, he was speaking to us about the some of the challenges that the 7000s were having. The programming of the overhead display in the cars, apparently there was limited ability as far as being able to program it. So, I mean, that would be something that would be really key, that when you go forward, being able to have the ability to update that on your own and say, you know, we can change this, we can change that, as opposed to we only have the canned messages and we can't do anything other than that. So that's it.
Thank you. Yeah.
Although, actually, let me get Yvette first.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's true.
I, yeah, sure. Okay, sure. So I'm looking to Lynn for this.
I think building off Sawyer and the larger screens, because, you know, we all realize display advertisement and all of that. If it were up to me, I would have those screens on, like, the stations also, because I feel like eventually they might pay for themselves over time. But not just because of that, but because we do have, I think, the world's, like, first school for the hard of hearing, Gallaudet University, and they can't hear, or like they can't hear the announcements, and I feel like these displays should have sign languaging on them so that we could at least be more accessible, and it'll look really good. It's great PR also, but just like, I just think like the more accessible you are, like better it is for everyone, so I think that should be a push. USB chargers, they're not that useful, but for those of us who, you know, our phones die and, you know, we can't call an Uber or loved ones when we're trying to, like, exit the stations. Like, that's difficult, too. I want to focus my questions also on partnerships and policies. So partnerships, so more along the lines of those display advertisements. But, like, partnerships yesterday when we talked to the senior citizens, they said, how can we get – I know discussions already probably have been done, but with Uber and Lyft, with Metro Access, or trying to get more riders – the supply of drivers that are willing to drive in Metro Access to build that so that it could be more on time, or if Uber and Lyft, they could, you know, share some of that and so that senior citizens could see where they're going, or if they're part of Uber Pool or Lyft Line, they could see what other Metro Access customers or riders are connected with them in that pool. I guess also policy. So we have one video that was really, a rider that was really, really upset. But so basically she left her wallet at home. She parked in a parking lot, in one of these parking lots. She left it at home, so she didn't have any money on her. She had her credit card number memorized, and so she put money in her card, but it didn't go through all the way. Like, it takes like 24 hours or something like that. So she tried to get out, but the people wouldn't let her out because you need to pay for it. So she posted this video crying. She's outraged, that's what she said. And she had all her gal pals and everyone, like, comments. And but it brings a legitimate question of policy, like, what happens if you lost your wallet or you got it stolen? Or, like, how do you get out in that situation? Like, what's the Metro's policy currently regarding that? And are there any ways that we could kind of get them to defer their payment until later with penalty? Or, I don't know, they surrendered their smart trip card, but they don't have it because, you know, they may not have it if they got their wallet stolen. I'm just trying to see what, or do they just stay there until they could pay, like, bail? I don't know.
So I'll have to research that. I don't know what the official policy is, but I do know that when you push that button on the gate, if you can't get your credit card to work, you do get a human being, and they have some discretion, and if you're not a repeat offender and you really have a legitimate issue, you know, they do have some discretion. So I'll get you the official policy, but that's an unfortunate experience for her to have had.
Yeah, because she went to one gate operator, and they said no, and then she tried to go in the other way. I think she might have said something like, I'm going to find my way out of here, whether you like it or not. And I think she pushed back too, but I think her claim was that they were also rude. I think, yeah, maybe everyone was frustrated at that point, but yeah, so. Anyways, thanks.
Pat? I'll probably send you the rest of my suggestions from AAC concerning 7000 series, but a few of them that I wanted to mention. One, when you talked about the more handholds, on the front seats, the one that are priority seats, if we could have armrests on those, we've got a lot of disabled people, seniors, who need to have that armrest to help them stand, and there's nothing there right now. So that would be a huge win. Also, where we have wheelchairs for emergency evacuation, I think we need to look at repositioning the wheelchairs, because if there's an emergency, having the wheelchairs up front, right as you come in the door, is going to be a evacuation hazard. So we have some thoughts on that, and I'll send you those. And then lastly, the intercom. There's, you know, you look at the 7000 series, I think you push and then you talk. Some of them you push in and hold and then you talk. And so there's no consistency there. I think we need to look at the instructions that we have as far as, you know, maybe saying push once for the intercom button and then talk, you know, in the 7000 series. But between 5000, 6000, and 7000, there's no consistency, and it's hard to figure that out. Lastly, on the audio portion, which I'm very pleased that we have, it might be good for us, and I think RAC has also talked about this in the past, to maybe see if we could shorten some of the messages so that you could hear the whole message, red line train to Silver Spring. Sometimes all you get is red line train and the door is shut. So do we have to say that entire message, like, please move to the center of the car? Or if we have to say it, can we shorten it so we can get the whole message in? Yeah. So those sorts of things to think about and look at over time. And I think we can get some good recommendations from RAC and AAC on particularly the messaging in the car. That would be great.
Thank you, Patrick, and thank all of you. Really thoughtful suggestions. And we'll be back to you as you know, we move further down the line in this process to share with you where we are and get your further input. So it's going to take some time. It's not going to be an overnight thing, but if you stay with us, I promise you'll hear more about this. So thank you all very much. Appreciate your time.
Thank you. Enjoy your evening conference call. There was some sarcasm mixed in there. It may not have come through as vehemently as I intended for it to. I will go to public comment, and I'm wondering if our member of the public has any comments they would like to make. If so, you are welcome to do so. If not, no pressure.
Well, my name is Kenneth Mitchell again. I guess we're attending these regularly. I guess regarding the 7000 series and just the trains in general, I've noticed that there's more consistency in the numbering of the cars, meaning it seems like they've repositioned the cars so that you have 3000 series trains, 4000 series trains, not this mix that they had before. I don't know if that improves reliability, but I've noticed that. I've noticed more standardization in the announcements. It's almost like they have either a computerized voice or one person doing the announcement, so they're more clear to understand. They're recorded, so they're more easy to comprehend. And I have noticed, though, that partition, I know it's been brought up before, between the cars where they had an issue where someone actually fell between them. It seems like that still hasn't been completed, because I still see trains where there's just those rubber, I don't know, stops or whatever, but you could, like, slip through. I guess that's probably about it that I can remember. Thanks.
sure everybody graciously read the meeting minutes that were sent out from our last meeting in September. Did anybody see anything that needs to be changed in there? Any corrections or omissions?
No changes. No changes needed.
Did Joy find a correction? Yeah, it's kind of like it's a tab instead of a space or something, but sure. So with the spatial adjustment there, do we have a motion to approve the minutes?
I move.
Okay, all in favor? Any opposition? Any abstentions? Okay, unanimous, no abstentions. So we actually have some time to talk about the committees tonight, which is exciting. That doesn't always happen. I am going to start with CISA, with the conversation, well, talk about whatever you'd like, but I would hope that you will at least mention the conversation we recently had with Nina Albert.
Absolutely. So budget has a few exciting updates. First, I'll focus on the conversation with Nina Albert. Second, I'll talk about the conversation we had yesterday with Victory Square Apartments retirement community. And third, I'll sort of mention a couple other ideas we had on the side. So with regards to our conversation with Nina Albert, Nina, as you might recall, is the director of, what's her official title again? I think Real Estate and Planning at WMATA. And we're talking with her about WMATA's desire to install retail in the system, what that might look like, you know, whether that's vending machines, whether that's carts, you know, selling things, whether that's little, you know, kiosks or stands with newspapers, whatnot, Amazon lockers. So it seems like she's pretty enthusiastic about the possibility of this at least being piloted within the next year, which is a major accomplishment, and she really wants the RAC to be involved. So what we've done in, again, sort of just briefing everybody, we've drafted a survey that we intend to send to, you know, people across this region, our riders, about what they think about this. You know, whether, for example, they would want food and drinks in the system or whether or not that's a big no. Whether or not, you know, Amazon lockers or convenience stores would actually be useful to them, where it might be useful, you know, how often they would patronize such retailers. So we had a call, so we drafted the survey within the budget committee, and of course we'd love to share sort of that draft with you all. We had a call with Nina Albert yesterday as a sort of a follow-up, and what she said was that they're very enthusiastic about this. They've sent it to the customer research team at WMATA, right? Yeah, customer research to sort of polish up the survey and then think about how we're going to distribute it. So the goal right now is, you know, on our Facebook page, probably Amplify, of course, you know, just trying to just get it out there to as many riders as possible to get that feedback. Still just sort of an informal survey, but as many suggestions and anecdotes as possible would really help them. The goal for this survey, according to them, is so they would love it for us to release it probably within the next couple of weeks, because at the end of November they are also releasing something called a request for a request for proposals from interested retailers that might want to, you know, establish some sort of presence in the WMATA system. So they're looking at this from kind of, you know, the supplier side, so trying to get proposals from those retailers. And then the consumer side, you know, what does demand look like? What do riders want? And so having both of those at the same time would be really helpful for them. The goal is for them to try to get the supplier side of that sort of proposal, all of those proposals in by the end of the year. And then hopefully sometime spring or summer next year to perhaps pilot something. So we're making really good progress on that front. Paul, do you want to sort of jump in briefly to talk about that?
I just wanted to ask them what numbers is she looking at for the survey? Like, does she have a target number of returns that she wants to see?
She didn't really mention that. Yeah, Lorraine.
My question is, what is the deadline, if you know, for this survey?
For the survey, we could probably give people a few weeks. So probably through, if we release it by the end of October, you know, sometime end of November-ish. Would that
and,
be?
And you would let us all know whenever that.
Of course. Oh yes, absolutely. And before I think it goes out, we'd love for the entire council to be able to comment on it, you know, and make any suggestions or edits. You know, it's still in a draft format right now, so yeah. Okay. Nick, did you have a question?
How are the surveys going to be distributed?
Electronically.
Is, like, how are people going to receive the notification?
Yeah, no, that's a good question, and it's something that we talked about on the phone and are struggling with a little bit as well. You know, we want to try to make sure we get this out there to as many people as possible. So, you know, right now it's just electronic, and we were just thinking of making it, you know, putting it on our Facebook page despite, you know, we don't have a very high number of likes, but I think Amplify, because we have there is a much larger community of riders there, they would get the notification and it would go to a much larger population.
It might be worth checking too, like, you know, when you register your smart trip card to see if you can get access to those emails. To
okay, that's a great suggestion, yeah. Does anyone else have sort of similar thoughts? We could, yeah. That's not a bad idea. Express. Yeah, sure. Great. That's an awesome idea. These are all awesome.
Okay. I sent the original document over to get the conversation going, but it's kind of late.
Right.
So tomorrow I'll go in and sort of really try to move the
thanks so much, Joy. Okay.
Also, Greater Washington, maybe.
Greater Washington, yeah, Greater Washington. Rebecca, did you have an idea?
I was just going to ask, it sounds like Lynn might be willing to distribute it to stakeholders based on her suggestion about
Lynn.
How open they are. It sounds like they have a lot of groups, so maybe we could give
idea.
It to her.
Awesome. These are fantastic ideas. And we're really excited about the fact that I think at the beginning we just saw this more as sort of an internal, kind of informal survey, but it seems like Nina and her team really kind of want to take this up and partner with us on, you know, getting the numbers of survey respondents really big. So.
You may also be able to get in touch with some of the transportation reporters who can put it on
idea.
Their own
yeah,
Twitter, various social media feeds.
Okay. Awesome. Okay. So... Okay. So within the next week or so, we'll try to get the nearly finalized version of that survey. We'll send it around to everybody on the rack, and please feel free to respond with comments, suggestions, questions that you think would be, you know, helpful. We're trying to keep it relatively succinct, of course. We don't want it to be a 100-question survey, but, you know, if there's something there that's missing, feel free to, you know, share. And then, so briefly on sort of the meeting that Joe and I had yesterday, we met with a community of about 15 or 20 residents, elderly residents at Victory Square Apartments, which is a retirement home community near Minnesota Avenue. And it was really, it was a really eye-opening and good experience. Joe and I learned just how much this community really relies on having the bus stop right in front of their door. And, you know, they even made comments like, if we don't have a bus stop, if our bus stop gets eliminated, you know, someone's going to have a heart attack walking down the street, or someone's going to get robbed at gunpoint because, you know, this community is kind of dangerous. You know, these are things that they said. And I think the lesson beyond sort of the pieces of feedback that we heard from them, also with regards to Metro Access, was just how important it is to really get out there. And so I would love to see the RAC. Joe and I would both love to see the RAC doing more of these, you know, direct constituent outreach. You know, going to people, especially people, you know, in communities that don't often get heard. And this is one of those communities. So. They are one of the communities impacted by the U5 and U6 change that was being proposed on the dockets, and according to that sort of the map that was put out, the route would be the route in their particular neighborhood would be the same, but the bus would be going in different directions. And they thought that that was okay as long as that the frequency of their buses didn't change too dramatically, because they said they could transfer and it wasn't a huge problem. But their number one priority was making sure that they still had access to that bus stop right in front of their house. I don't know exactly why. No. But it, yeah. It's on Barnes. But, okay, good, yeah. That's right. Yeah. Right, yeah. That's right. Yeah, it's very both of them, yeah. Okay. Yeah, absolutely. Well, it would be great if, as a RAC, we could maybe work together on finding communities like these, schools, neighborhood associations, retirement communities that really sort of need their interests and their voice to be heard, and you know, maybe doing some sort of sustained campaign of kind of constituent outreach.
Yeah, I mean, just to start, I mean, we could do that search simultaneously, but on a parallel track, we should, if anything, just create a Google form with like basic information,
right,
and put it on our Facebook page, yeah, so that people who want to hear from us,
like invite the RAC to speak at your
exactly
next
like
meeting or something,
they could just request, yeah, us. You know, that way we'll know like if how much traction there is, or in terms of the, you know, how many groups are out there that want us to be there. And if we find a lot, then great, then we could go out there. And if we can't, then we'll also be doing this outreach. And
thanks. Sorry, it's so long.
Sorry, I was just going to say that my organization, we have outreaches every day at all the seniors' buildings in the District of Columbia,
right,
nursing homes, and other wellness activity centers. So this is something that I'm, like, really excited about, and I would love to be able to. I think a Google form would be less accessible than maybe a flyer. We could post flyers in certain places like that, and if people, I mean, each one of those centers has different groups, like a women's group meets at that center,
right,
or a veterans group meets here or whatever. So I think that's really exciting, and I think
we should. Uh-huh.
Any other questions for Sita? Okay, then we will go to PPP.
Okay, sure. So basically, it's building off of that. So in terms of what appetite we have, in terms of, so initially it was like monthly we should be out there, but then it turned to quarterly. But this was just something that I think it makes sense based off of what was in the bylaws, like that we're supposed to be doing these sorts of things. But we've never really had a discussion among the RAC on like what our overall strategy is going to be, or like if you guys have an appetite for this, or if you guys are interested in doing like those town halls, because that's something that I'm interested in. Like even asking like people that are on Facebook or I think our issue currently is that we don't have an audience, like as you can probably tell from this, like yet. But eventually, I think there will be some people that will tune in once things roll along. Like, definitely not in the beginning, but who knows? I just think that we should be out there and have that platform so that we could directly ask questions. They could answer back through Facebook or through other media. But yeah, what are your thoughts in general? Like, what are your suggestions and ideas?
Metro has outreach.
Yeah.
Lynn talked about all the outreach they've been doing.
Yeah,
does anybody get anybody here get informed when they're our community or our state or our county?
I think this was like, I don't know. It seems like she was addressing things that happened a while ago. while ago. I don't know if they're still doing it. But even so, like, I'm sure there are hearings and things that happen, but we don't get looped in. Not intentionally so or maliciously. It's just, you know, we're not really... Maybe they don't think that we're interested, but we should let them know that, yeah, we're going to do these types of events and we want to be looped in because this is the role that you've given us through the bylaws. So.
Well, can I just direct it? Could you ask your department from now on when the Metro does any outreach, any meetings at all, that the appropriate RAC member be informed? Well, you know, I don't know what the criteria are, but if you're going out and doing community meetings, you're still under groups and everybody else.
Oh, that's the PVP, though. That's the participation thing. Is that what you want to do?
Whatever she was talking about.
I know WMATA News, like, a lot of these events also occur, like, during, you know, work day, during lunch, or whatever. Yeah, I know, of course. Oh, yes, I agree. It's just sometimes it's not.
I'm sorry? Is it on the WMATA website?
No, I'm not sure. It could be, but I'll check the site.
Outrageous concept.
Right? I mean, there's so much stuff out there. It's like, I just like to have it all written down. So I'll get that.
You're going to get the list for us?
Yeah. Thank you, Malcolm.
Let me ask you, how far in advance are you going to get us a list and how comprehensive will that list be?
I don't know. I got to get the list out. So if you let me get the list, we'll see what's on it.
Well, what I'm suggesting is we institutionalize something like this, is that, you know, it doesn't make any difference. Once a month, once every 2 months, once a quarter, whatever you do, you publish a list and you make it available to us. Not getting us a list of what's going on in the next month.
No, I think those projects are kind of planned out. So, you know, they should be able to get it to us. And if there's something new, add out, ask that they send me a new list. Work?
And they should, yeah. Like, I mean, just, it's, yeah, just good coordination and stuff. That, I think that's it.
Thanks. I joined the RAC because I thought that it'd be good to help WMATA if I could, and I understood that that meant interacting with writers. I'm just wondering, has something changed? Because I thought we weren't supposed to talk to the public until we had sent an email to WMATA and to the chair saying that we are going to be talking to the public.
Where does it say that?
I was, last year when I was going to schedule something, I was told I needed to make sure that I, am I hallucinating?
No, that's a good point. One of the things that we did yesterday is really emphasized first of all, we let Joy know, and Catherine know sort of ahead of time, and invited all the DC reps to join us. We also at the event sort of stressed that we're not WMATA,
I think all of those things are important. Yeah. I just was wondering, did something change? Because if you're saying, hey, if you want to go out and talk to these folks, I thought it was a little bit, you know, we needed to be careful.
Although I agree, like, in general, if we did have any outreach, like, intentional, like, plans for events or whatever, that we should have something put together that's vetted and have a sponsor and, you know, deliverables, stakeholders, you know, risk management, all of that, communication plan, all of that put together, marketing. But I think in terms of just everyday old, like, you know, interacting with our constituents, I think that is a basic, like, core thing that we are accustomed to. And so for me, I think these, I frame this more of these rap rallies or whatever they're called, or town, I think that sounds too revolutionary, honestly. Rallies does not sound like it's like a, yeah, writer relations or whatever. But I think even the station thing, that might be a little too, my vision was like, you know, we're all representing a specific jurisdiction, and we have our own constituents, like stations are like everywhere. Not all of us have gone to all stations within our jurisdictions, nor should we, but that'd be kind of fun and cool. But they're right there, and that's where the writers are, but we can also do a lot of other things, like she mentioned, like riding along with writers or having meetings at different places instead of just the same place all the time, even though this is very central and like accessible, I think. But for me, it's just more of, this is great, like being able to talk with you guys, and often we don't even get this opportunity. We're just hearing people speak, and which is great too. That's useful information, but I want to hear the writers that we are supposed to be representing. Like, I want to hear directly from them, because they have a lot of ideas that probably aren't being tapped yet or listened to yet. And I think this is so crucial, because if we don't do that, like, we don't have any legitimacy otherwise. Like, I don't think so. Like, we represent ourselves in that sense, but as writers, but I think we should have more of that. And I think what Malcolm said today about, he, breaking news, like our, which is silly. But yeah, I'll continue to be silly. But I think he's serious about there being more of, like, from his marketing background, more data behind the decisions that WMATA is even making. Even pushing for more data to be open and transparent so that writers can know, you know, where are dollars going for what contract. I think I'm just so used to Data Act where every contract, loan, you know, all of this is all public information and people could look at it if they want to and, like, find out trends. But yeah, I think we should be more out there instead of just.
I
know I'm going on and on. I think the first, like, obvious thing is because we want retail to have it. I think, at least I do. And I think that survey, using the platform, like, what we're going to push out, like, that could be one. I mean, there's so many things that we can do. It's just, you know, coming together and figuring out, like, the best way to do it as a group. And then within our respective jurisdictions, what can we do there? And I think maybe the chairs, vice chairs could lead in that kind of perspective or not. But yeah, I would welcome that. Yeah.
To leverage that access that you have, like,
yeah.
Our regular meeting is a
Do people want to volunteer for that? Like, because I don't have a lot of bandwidth, but like I've been trying to do my best. I'm new. Paul's been helping out every once in a while too, but like I think, are there any other volunteers that would want to do that every once in a while? Just, yeah. No, I'm just asking for like manpower. Like, who is willing to like volunteer and help me and anyone else like do this? Because I feel like we talk a lot and do a lot, like not directly to you, but like just in general. Like, I want to do stuff. Like, let's be out there. And like, I don't. I mean, plans are great. Like, but there's Agile. There's like PMP, like Jam. But like, and then there's like Agile, like that. Those methodologies. And I think having 2-week sprints, like being able to push things out, pilot things, start small, you know, scale, you know, smart, you know, fail fast, fix early. Like, these are all things that I think. Sorry, I'm taking up way too much time. But yeah. So I think I know. But here, I think this is important. Like, I think we should do something, right? So what do we do then?
I do want to say that if we don't develop our own plan, we won't build trust with the riders if we don't have rapport with the board. And we're all working on that in our committees. Sawyer's been great about opening up our safety committee to the board, and we've got a really good dialogue. And I think we need to leverage the relationships that we're building with the board so that we can demonstrate to the riders that there's an actual pathway. Because we can't go into the community and be there everywhere and take their feedback and get no result.
I think it's both ways, though. Yeah.
I know. So what I'm suggesting is that we develop an outreach plan for ourselves. And I think Lynn seemed to be on board with us getting access to buildings to have some of our regular meetings in Maryland and Virginia. And if we agree to have 2 or 3 meetings every year, like whatever, you know, if we plan that and she and others help us promote that, then we can have one accessible platform to develop relationships with riders. Right now, please let me finish.
Oh, no, of course I know.
Right now, if we start a heavy outreach campaign, I mean, what are we going to tell people? We're going to give everything that the riders tell us directly to the board, but maybe it will be better if we start small and actually deliver. And that's my suggestion, because I would love to do outreach, and I think it's a really good idea, but I think we need to have a plan in place so that we can tell the riders, okay, you're giving us this, and we're going to report it back to the board next month, and we meet with them every quarter, and we do blah, 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 and that we have something to provide back to them.
So my impression on that is, I know Lynn offered that, but I think we already have a building that we use that people don't really come to us for. So I think I don't think the solution is us choosing like any building, even if it is in a different place. Like, that is a great option, honestly. I think we should consider diversity and have a more, you know, in different places. But I don't like framing it as outreach, because I'm not really trying to push anything out. I'm more trying to be out there so that we could get things from the writers. I think just to get more feedback from the writers, like just to see, like, let's just observe them even. Like, we just need to be out there. I'm not even there in terms of outreach. Like, I want to be out there. Like, and then be able to, and I think the survey thing is one first step in terms of being out there and gathering feedback or whatever, but I mean, if you guys have suggestions on what type of outreach you want to see, then please, like, put it on the, it's just, I feel like if we're going to wait until we neatly package everything and then try to get all this thing finished first and then push it out, like, it's never going to happen. Like, there's a reason why we've never done this before in the history of the RAC. Like, we have to do something, and it doesn't need to be all sexy and polished. Like, I'm not asking for that. I'm just asking if people are willing to go out once a quarter to their stations, or I don't know. If you guys have any other suggestions, please tell me.
Did you have something you wanted to say?
So far, we haven't done it yet.
That's
for ripping off the verticality of the
name tech. I did send that plan out to everyone in terms of the stations, all the stations are listed, sign up for the station that you want to be a part of, and then, you know, we're going to work on the materials by the end of this year, like trying to get that on a parallel track. But like, if you guys are interested in pitching in, like, please, or like, if this is not what you want to do, like, please propose an alternative, because I want to be able to not just be part of a body that just stays the status quo, you know? I want to be useful as to the maximum ability that we can. I think we all
Valerie?
Want that.
Valerie? Yeah. Just,
yeah.
I am interested in going to one or more metro stations and seeing, observing, talking, enriching, whatever, with writers and with the folks who work at that station, because I think we're all in this together. I don't know, because I'm concerned. I talk to my folks at work. I talk to folks on the train. I actually talked with the station manager at Federal Center Southwest today. But, you know, other than taking in their complaints, I want to have the 7000 series go to, you know, my stop, and I want to take it every day. You know, other than taking that in, then what? And that, I think, gets back to Rebecca's point. So the answer is, yes, I would be willing to do that, and I would like to do that. But I need to also be able to say, okay, now I have this stuff that I learned. What?
So Google Forms, or like, how do we document and gather and collect this information in an organized way? But also, I think this is just helpful for us to even talk about this, because this is...
Yeah. And the answer is not a form, but I'll take pictures with my
camera. The answer is not a form. The answer is a plan. We need a plan, and we can develop the plan in the rack.
Okay, let's do it then.
Okay.
How though?
I'm sorry, now I have actually a couple of very quick comments. On Clarence's point, I definitely agree that we should be using the methods that we already have. I will say, though, that in meeting the people yesterday at the Senior Community Center, you know, for example, we were like, oh, well, you know, comment on our Facebook page. They're like, well, we don't have Facebook. You know, there are a couple surveys online if you want to, you know, let us know what your thoughts are. You know, you can email us. A lot of them said, you know, we don't have a computer. So I do think there is some value for a lot of communities in being out there. With regards to the plan, I definitely think it's good to have a plan. And it sort of touches on both Rebecca and Valerie's point. Yesterday when we went, right, they had a lot of input. And then they said, so what are you going to do with this? You know, tell us answers. You know, is the bus stop going to stay there? You know, and of course, as RAC members, we were like, oh, you know, we don't. We don't, you know, it was kind of hard to tell them. We don't know. We're not the decision makers, but we'll try to do everything we can. And at the end, we sort of held ourselves accountable by saying, you know, okay, we're going to tell you, here are the people we're going to talk with. Here are the priorities that we will convey to Amada. And we're going to try to get back to you within the next month or maybe come visit you again. So I think it's really helpful to have some sort of plan going in about the goals that you want to accomplish and sort of the people who you're going to bring this feedback to. Because otherwise, I agree, it's, you know, we want to make sure that this public input doesn't fall on deaf
ears. And I did already start on one when I sent it out. And so, like, that link that I sent out in response to when we responded to something that happened, but you guys got the link. But if you guys click on that, you guys will see it. But I just think that,
hang on,
we don't need to have all the answers and all the solutions. Paul? All the way. We're never going to be able to have all the answers and all the solutions. Yeah.
Start talking.
It's okay. I think I want to reiterate something that Sitsa had, and that's really, really important.
Okay.
You're talking about people who don't, like, they look at a computer, they just feel like whatever the input they have is just going to get lost in the, ether space, you know, and when you actually have a face to talk to, you actually get that empathy
Right.
That,
yeah.
Look, it's easy to write, you know, for me, it's easy to type, oh, I'm going to lose my bus stop, or I'd like this, or I'd like that. But if you actually speak to someone, yeah, says, you it's know what, this is a face-to-face contact, and that's what...
And the feeling that you can make
heard,
a voice.
Being yeah. heard. Now, I don't know if we can save their bus stop or not.
Right.
I hope so. But at least you're listening to their problem.
Yeah.
And
they know that...
That's critical.
They have advocates on their behalf.
Now, Joe did put pen to paper on what a plan was. If there were some holes in it, I mean, there were some blank lines in there, and if you want to look at that and say and add input to that, I think Joe would be very happy to hear to read that.
Provide an alternative plan. Like, I'm happy.
That's all I got to say.
You know, delete my plan. I don't care. As long as we have something out there, I don't. Yeah.
Pat.
Thanks. So, with respect to the bus stop, which is an interesting situation, I'm sorry I couldn't make that yesterday, but there's. There has been a policy in place concerning bus stops and folks that are using Metro Access. And so we got a commitment, the AAC did get a commitment from WMATA that they would not remove any bus stops if they were going to make people dependent on Metro Access. Because the cost of Metro Access is $55 a ride.
Yeah.
Removing that bus stop, it doesn't make financial sense. So... Those are the kind, but we, you know, so I'd love to be able to argue alongside to say you don't want to reduce or get rid of that bus stop. The other thing that can happen is if you take out that bus stop, you can also take out the paratransit that goes there because you don't have fixed route. So those are the kind of, you know, issues that come up with respect to that. You know. That becomes the lifeline for those people.
So
it's a critical.
Right after this meeting. Can we try as a council? Do you guys think it's worth saving? Because if so, can we all go for it? I'm sorry. Hang on. Nick.
I think we've kind of gotten off track a little bit from the committee update to a brainstorming session. So I'd like to... If you want to keep talking about this, maybe suggest it as an agenda item for another meeting, and out of respect to the other committees, move on so they can give their updates.
Yeah. What are the other committee updates? Let's do that right now.
Nick, are you going to give the customer service update?
I can.
Okay, because we've got you and Sawyer then.
Sure. So we've got the main thing we had in the works was trying to come up with standards for communications for announcements within the Metrorail system, and the idea is to have some kind of measurable benchmarks we can monitor and measure customer satisfaction or customer service from a communication standpoint. So where we're at right now, we're trying to still holding for feedback from WMATA, trying to get some feedback on what their current policies are, what their current procedures are, so we can try to build on that. If we don't hear from that soon, we can just move forward with our own recommendations with that. Go ahead. Yeah, that'd be great to have. So, yeah, and the idea is, like, you know, when you think of a franchise, it's consistency. When you go to McDonald's, you get the same thing every McDonald's you go to. So the idea is to get some standardization for communications just to provide a little bit better customer service. So that's where we're at with that. We're also waiting to see if we can observe a station manager training. So we're just trying to see what they go through, just to observe that and just to try to get their perspective from it, from what they go through. Again, from a customer service perspective, to try to provide a little bit better service. You know, people are paying more for less, so if we could have a little bit better service, that's at least one positive thing we can try to hope to deliver.
Where do you stand on that, getting into one of those trainings? I heard there was some debate as to whether that would be permitted,
yeah,
getting
that's
multiple answers.
Kind of exactly where we're still at.
Okay.
And we do have their curriculum, too, so we are going to be trying to go through that and see if there's any suggestion. The idea is, like, we want to be collaborative with them. We don't want to, you know, kick the door up and say, you need to do this. I mean, we want to try to work with them. So that's why we're trying to see what's already in place, if that's going to happen. And then our next step is, once we move past the communications and the station manager thing, is to just try to work with the board's customer service committee, see what their next priorities are, and try to hopefully partner with them to try to push those objectives forward. So that's kind of where we're at.
Any questions for Nick? Will, briefly, and then we'll move on to Sawyer so she doesn't get shafted again.
You know, I'm probably the briefest person in this room. Looking at you. I want to say I agree with Clarence, because a lot of people are very visual in this day and age, and especially if we're trying to pull more. We want to pull, of course, the entire ridership, but where I see a lot of comments online, complaints, you know, is from people in the millennial age group. So in that respect, knowing where they're at, being more visual and being more vocal online and electronically, that would be something that would help us pull that group, you know, into, you know, what we're doing here, so they can see pictures of what we're doing. They can, you know, see blurbs about things that we've done. So in that regard, I agree with Clarence. Short.
Okay. Sawyer.
All right. I guess I'll first kind of talk about the last meeting and the last committee meeting and kind of what led up to that. Rebecca, you know, talked about how we're trying to better cultivate the relationship. And just reflecting on best practice, for me at least, I know I was fairly new, I think my goal, and I think the committee's goal, was to restart the relationship with the WMATA board counterparts so that we had an outlet and a very measured and calculated and anticipated direct line to them that we can establish, especially given bandwidth issues that we all experience for the first go at it. We decided to collate our thoughts into a memo that included our reflection, melding the staff we'd heard from, the board members we've heard from, even riders that we've heard from, and ourselves, and kind of just reflecting on what hearing all that meant for us, while also including very specific rider input that we have heard, and then following on that, actual specific recommendations that were backed up by data that we have currently available to us, whether it was through our staff requests or through recent studies. And I think it was very well received. And actually, I think it surprised a couple board members. And quite honestly, if they only just picked one thing from the memo and was like, I'm looking into this further, I think that's a success. Because we want to be very careful about information overload in our advisory capacity. So it was a very great meeting. We had three board members come, Lobby, Dorsey, and Goldman. We also had Pat Lavin, who was the chief safety officer there. I think that attendance alone really lended legitimacy to the safety and security subcommittee. And I think we're going to be taken seriously moving forward with these different recommendations. So I kind of see it as a long game, one where we're not overworked, and also while we're being responsive to what's happening in the current rider environment, actually being responsive to what WMATA board members and WMATA staff want to know. Because if we can say, hey, remember when you asked us, is Metro getting safer? And we said we were going to pulse check that for you and get back to you. And that's our plan for the next meeting, is going to be really, what does that look like? To show that we can deliver back to them. And it might be an approach that only works in my committee, as it's not as innovative and maybe exciting. But I think it's going to be effective. And so I just wanted to put that out there, that I kind of see it as a long game, calculated steps, and just being taken seriously and providing that platform. So that was the last meeting. And
Sawyer, can I interrupt you a minute?
Sure, please.
One of the other things that I think that Sawyer did a good job on, and I'm going to just reference the back to good here, is it is true that major crime has gone down on Metro. And that is a true statement. But one of the things that Sawyer pushed back on is, yes, major crime has gone down on Metro, but sexual assaults went up. And, yeah, great that other crime is down. We're still concerned about sexual assaults. And so I think that another thing that we can provide to WMATA and to the board is also saying, yeah, that's let's talk about that some more. So thank you, Sawyer, for doing that. And I think that's another place where we can contribute is, yes, great, let's recognize the accomplishments, and let's also say what needs still to be done.
Yeah. No, thank you. Yeah, and coupled with, like, I also pulled from, like, news stories and figured out when the last one was, so I could say, did you board members know the last time WMATA actually did one of these was over a year ago? Would you consider it being an annual publication, right? That was the recommendation, not telling them how to go about it. But, if you know, it's out there now. We've recommended it. So, hope you're all okay with that. But that's, yes, thank you for that specific example. And I mean, we did intentionally. I didn't invite everyone intentionally, so don't feel like you were left out. But the intention was to keep it informal and small, and to empower the committees to actually do, you know, what they were set up to do. So that's on the last meeting. I do want you to save the date for November 5th. That is the next safety exercise. As you heard from Lynn today, they actually see it as pretty valuable. I also see it as valuable. So November 5th, it's at the Van Dorn Station in Alexandria.
Is that Sunday again?
It's a Sunday. It'll be early start in the morning, probably, with refreshments. So, yeah. Yeah, you can't take the Metro probably to it, so that's like the caveat. We can look into that. But November 5th, please mark your calendars. And I just want to comment, I think this is probably the most circulated report in RAC history. I feel like it got sent around, and if you weren't on it, just to kind of brief you that, one of Paul Wiederfeld's kind of initiatives was a quality assurance and internal compliance and oversight unit. They've been putting out reports for a few months now. The most recent one seemed to get a lot of attention in the media, if you saw it in the RAC or the WMATA news clips. And I also circulated amongst the committee, and then I know it got circulated amongst other people. So I just wanted to address it, that it was a report about Metro Rail Station manager activities. And there's a lot of safety issues that come from that. Inoperable flashlights, expired first aid, and those are just like tangible items that were that they found fault in, but there's also a bigger issue of one more concerning to me, and that is the surveillance systems that the managers use to monitor their own station within their kiosk was actually not feeding them those images, while people at the Rail Operations Center and you know, Metro Transit Police could see it. For some reason, there was some patch in the new technology or whatever that was being deployed that wasn't allowing the station managers to see that real-time visual. So when we start talking about overcrowding, for example, if they don't leave their kiosk, they might not actually know that it's occurring. There's a lot of other stuff in the report. I'm trying to work my way through it, so don't feel like you have to read it. I got you on that one. But as a committee, we're going to be addressing this because it's unfortunately kind of scathing. But I will say that there are other reports in the interest of transparency. I know we've talked a lot about it in data sets and things aside. These actual reports are available on a transparency link on WMATA. So you can access them, and they come in accompanied with a detailed work plan for corrective action, which I'll be interested to see if it actually takes off. I think we need to give it a little bit of time since they just started a few months ago, but just to have in our minds knowing that they're taking these steps, and that's somewhere where we can follow up on uniquely as RAC to say, we read this was going to be fixed. Is it fixed, and if not, why? So, yeah, we'll be addressing that at the upcoming meeting. Thank you for listening.
Yeah. I think I circulated the article in the Washington Post on the 25th, everybody, on that report. It certainly covers your committee, it covers customer service, and probably a lot, I hope that a lot of people have interest in that. I've suggested to Colin and Catherine that we invite the authors of that report to either come to the customer service committee or come speak at the next RAC meeting, because I think the stuff in there is very important. It's things that I have to, speaking for myself, that I've been talking about for a long time. A lot of that stuff doesn't come of any surprise to me. The specifics, I don't, you know, about not having cabinets stocked with emergency equipment, I don't know. But I think I want to pick up on just a few things other people said. I think that Sawyer and the Customer Service Committee are beginning to create a model. The model is engage those comparable committees on WMATA board if you want to get anything done. That's point one. In a broader sense, I really encourage you all to either caucus with your county people, your county board, your people who represent your county or Alexandria, the district, and get to know your board members. I mean, and do it either county by county or state by the three jurisdictions, because we need to know those people, so we don't have to worry about all the time about getting something before the board and getting it hung up. If you know the people, they'll carry the water. They'll carry the water for you. And finally, let's use the soapbox. In terms of public outreach, I think it would be most effective if you want to go out and meet people at the stations. Contact the board members who represent that region or that area, and do it together with the board members, because we're advisory. We really don't have the expertise or the time or the clout to deliver a lot of things. We have a hard enough time getting from here to there. But I think if you're there with a board member, and a lot of them, not all of them, but a number of them, people like Malcolm, he wants us to engage with him, and others do too. So I just suggest we think about those things. I think we really need to get tight with the board, and there are various ways we can do it. And I commend Sawyer and some of the stuff we're doing at customer service to start beginning to do that. I mean, that's one way of getting things done. Go to those boards, go to those committee meetings, and make it theirs. You know, make our issues their issues. Let them carry the water. Carry the water for us.
Any further comments? Sure.
Okay, I'll make it real quick. For the first time in 22 years, the AAC elected a different chair. Phil Posner is now chair of the AAC. As immediate past chair, he has asked me to still sit with you guys, be part of the RAC. He may be coming from meeting to meetings, but the new chair for AAC is Phil Posner. So, good friend, and we are. I'm still part of the leadership team. But congratulations to Phil, and he'll be serving as chair of the AAC.
But that doesn't mean that you're retiring.
No. No, I'm afraid. They created a new position for me, immediate past chair, and they're giving me all kinds of work.
Chairman, have you heard it? I have one last pass. It's just really quick. So Malcolm actually wrote a post on our Facebook group. Could you show him some love by liking it or doing something and like or commenting on it and saying thank you for being a strong advocate or whatever, like of writers.
And then one last point of information for everybody. Our bylaws were finally approved by the board. So the updated bylaws with the word advise still in our mission have been approved. So that one is finally over. PPP is still the same. So with that, unless I hear any objections, I am considering this meeting adjourned. Although, turn on your... If you... One more piece of information.
Yvette has something to say.
Yeah, my apologies. But do turn on your mic, please.